My next guest is a young man and a full-time real estate investor. He's owner of Bridge Properties, and he's also the founder of a website by the name of BehindTheDeals.com. And it's a website where he analyzes high-profile real estate deals and extracts the practical lessons for his readers. I'm pretty impressed with his work, and I asked him to join me today to discuss just one of his articles profiling a fascinating purchase by Carl Icahn of a busted Las Vegas hotel deal that was purchased after the crash of 2008. His name is Josh Baruchim, and he's with me today. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Thanks for having me on.
So a lot of my listeners are in South Florida, and they're going to know the name of this deal because it was from the people who bought the iconic Fountain Blue Hotel in Miami Beach, and this was the Fountain Blue of Las Vegas, which they were trying to develop. How did this story begin? Who were the players, and how did Carl Icahn get into the mix here?
Sure. This story begins in 2005, where Turnberry Associates, a South Florida-based development company, acquired the Fountain Blue Miami Beach.
Mm-hmm.
After it acquired the Fountain Blue Miami Beach, Turnberry Associates planned a $1 billion renovation of the Miami Beach Hotel, along with a brand new 4,000-room sister hotel on the Las Vegas Strip.
Mm-hmm.
After 2 years of planning, in 2007, the hotel in Las Vegas finally broke ground. 2 years later, in 2009, the project went bankrupt and the opportunity moved to Miami Bankruptcy Court.
Yeah, so hold on. Let's take a step back here, because a lot of people will know about Turnberry. The Turnberry Isles is a big project, a huge community in Aventura in North Miami. So these are the same developers of the properties there. And they decided, after they bought the Fountain Blue in Miami Beach, they decided to have a sister hotel in Vegas and call it the Fountain Blue of Las Vegas. How much did they end up spending on this thing?
During the first 2 years of construction, they spent $2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time that the project went bankrupt, it was estimated that it had about $800 million left to go.
Yeah, so they spent $2 billion. Now, they bought it right at a point when Vegas was doing extremely well. Their gambling receipts had been growing by double digits each year. The population had been growing. And I mean, it was a hot place to be. So there was a lot of building going on. It seemed like the perfect time. And then 2008 crash happened. And you write in your article that Bank America basically said, no more, we're not going to lend you the money to finish the hotel, right?
Right. Bank of America had a commitment to lend the remaining $800 million for the project to be completed.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided that, considering the state of the economy and considering the bank's finances, they backed out of their commitment and they left Turnberry Associates hanging.
Yeah, and I guess Turnberry Associates couldn't get another lender. They couldn't find anybody to finish the project. They had $2 billion in to purchase it, plus I think they were about 70% complete, so they had put quite a lot more money into it. And since they couldn't finish the property, they went bankrupt in Miami court. Is that where Icahn stepped in?
Yeah. So Carl Icahn very aggressively pursued this opportunity from the second it seemed that it was entering bankruptcy. 157 parties expressed interest in the Fountain Blue opportunity. Out of those 157 parties, only 8 signed confidentiality agreements to be able to review very detailed information about the property. Ultimately, 3 bids were submitted to the Miami Bankruptcy Court, but Carl Icahn's bid was the only qualified bid, and therefore it was accepted at $150 million.
So originally, Turnberry Associates paid $2 billion plus improvements, and he picked up this property, which was 70% complete, for $150 million. Is that right?
Actually, Turnberry Associates, way before 2005, they built 2 residential towers behind the Fountain Blue Las Vegas Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time that Turnberry acquired the Fountain Blue Miami Beach, Turnberry already owned the 24.5 acres of land on the Strip.
Yeah.
But after after acquiring Fontainebleau Miami Beach and proceeding to build the hotel, $2 billion were invested in constructing the partially built hotel that currently sits there.
Wow. So back then, you write that the cost of the land when Turnberry was buying it, I mean, there was one hotel, the New Frontier Hotel, that went for $1.2 billion, which was $34 million an acre, but Icon's purchase price was just a bit over $6 million an acre. It's astonishing, really.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting what a market cycle can do to the value of a property.
Yeah, that's one of the warnings I'm sure you're going to have at the end of this discussion about investing in real estate. So he got 70% complete. Now, what was his plan as looking back on it and trying to figure this out? Was his plan to buy it, improve it, finish the hotel, and then resell it? Or did he do something differently?
From the get-go, it seemed that Carl Icahn planned to just hold the property in its current situation and wait for the market to improve. Mm-hmm. He really didn't make any attempt to spend even a dollar on the property. He actually went off and immediately auctioned off all of the building's furniture, mattresses, beds, wallpaper, carpet. He just tried to get all the money he could out of the existing improvement.
Yeah.
Which is a big vote of not having confidence.
Yeah. So he was just treating this like a distressed company that he would buy on the New York Stock Exchange, hold it for a while, and then wait for conditions to improve and then resell it. He was not desiring, I guess, to be in the real estate business, to be a Vegas real estate owner. So he spent $150 million, and I think he got about $5 million. Was that correct for all the furniture and the carpets and the wallpaper?
From reading a few articles online, that was my estimate.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most prominent buyers of the furniture was the Plaza Hotel in downtown Las Vegas, which, based off of a few articles, seemed to transform itself into a luxury hotel just by acquiring the Fontainebleau's furniture.
They must have been happy.
Which was a pretty interesting read in itself. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They seemed to be very, very excited about being able to acquire all the furniture.
Yeah, so he was getting rid of the furniture, trying to lower his costs, and they were picking up furniture for pennies on the dollar. You know, it's when distress hits these markets, a lot of these interesting deals, you know, come out. So I understand that there's information that he's looking to sell the property now. What is he looking to sell the property for?
In November 2016, he awarded the listing of the property to brokerage firm CBRE. And based off of a few articles I researched online, it seems that the asking price is approximately $650 million.
Mm-hmm.
And people assume that it's going to be selling, you know, within 5% of that price.
My guest is Josh Baruchim, and he's written an article about this deal. He's the founder of BehindTheDeals.com, where you'll find more articles about high-profile real estate. We're going to get into some of the numbers here. Josh, so he purchased the property for $150, got a couple million or $5 million, whatever it was, for selling off the furniture. Now he's listing it some 9 years later or 8 years later for $650 million. You think he's going to get a price within 5% of that. That sounds like a pretty good deal, but let's break down some of the numbers here, because I think my listeners would be interested to know really how this stuff works and how you kind of figure out what the rates of return are and how you figure this out. So you actually did this work in your article, which I really loved. So let's go through some of the numbers. The purchase price was $150 million. Now, there were acquisition costs to buy that. What do you estimate those would be?
We estimated those to be about $2.5 million, which included due diligence costs, closing costs, legal fees,
okay,
and other costs to acquire the property.
All right, so you said $152,500,000. What about carrying costs for the property? I mean, we all have to pay property taxes, insurance, and maintenance. What did you estimate that that was for each year?
We estimated that at $5 million a year.
Okay, so over a 7-year period or so, that's $35 million. We've got the proceeds of the furniture that's in here. Other expenses. Yeah, I guess the city demanded that since it was an eyesore that he cover the building, I guess with a special tarp or whatever they do, and you estimate that cost $1 million to do.
Correct.
And then when you take the sale price, you put it at $625 million, less commissions of $25 million. That's a good business to be in, don't you think? That's a nice commission. And when you estimated that, what did you estimate his actual rate of return, considering all the money in, all the money out, the timing of all that money? What did you figure?
Considering an all-cash purchase, we projected a return of approximately 20%.
Per year?
Per year, a compounded return of 20% per year.
That's pretty spectacular. I mean, it's one thing perhaps to make that with a small amount of money, but on a $150 million purchase, that's pretty difficult to do, right?
Absolutely. Also considering the bare minimum work that Carl Icahn did to the property,
yeah,
makes it even more impressive.
Right. Now, there's another boon here for him, and that is that there were tax savings on all of this. Tell us a little bit about how much you think he would have saved in taxes, because real estate has certain tax advantages, and he gets to write off a lot of these expenses. Tell us about that.
Right. Real estate investors can deduct operating expenses of a property and depreciation expenses from their annual income. So based off of an all-cash purchase, considering the $5 million of annual holding costs, that would be $5 million that would be deducted from his taxable income.
Mm-hmm.
Also, considering the value of the improvements on the property, we projected that approximately $3 million a year of depreciation could be deducted from his income.
Mm-hmm.
So based off of that $8 million by which his taxes would be lowered, that would result in a $2.5 million annual tax savings based off of a 35% tax rate.
And that's annual?
That's annual.
Right. So multiply that times, I guess, 6 or 7, you're talking about $13 million. So his annual tax savings, you think, are about $4.5 million then?
Correct.
Not bad. So I guess if you added that to the $625 million or whatever the sale price is with all the expenses, that brings his rate of return even above the 20% annual. So let's talk about some of the lessons that we can learn from this. By the way, I'm speaking with Josh Baruchim. He is the founder of BehindTheDeals.com. Let me know if you guys listening out there like this kind of information. I'll do more of this, but I find this fascinating to see how these deals get done in the real world and some of the things that we can learn for it, which are lessons that we can apply to all investing, whether it's real estate or other kinds of investing. So let's talk about some of those lessons. Lesson number one, understand the risks and the challenges of ground-up development, renovations, and expansions of existing hotels, or rather, compared to the fact of just renovating and expanding an existing hotel, which may be a less risky option. Tell us about that.
Yeah, sure. So ground-up development brings with it several risks that don't come with acquiring and renovating existing buildings. One of those risks is financing. Developers rely on banks to provide financing during a construction project, which, as in the case of the Fontainebleau Las Vegas, can stop at any point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So developers need to consider what's the worst case scenario if the financing dries up.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, that worst case scenario is insolvency and the project stopping in its tracks.
That's a big risk, because now you're talking about not just the loss of some of your money or a fluctuation in the value of your money. You're talking about a real loss. If you go into bankruptcy, pretty much, you know, you lose everything. But I also think one of the risks that is important here is that whenever taking out a bank loan for anything, remember that banks can call their loans. They normally don't do that. They normally don't want to do that. But in times of difficulty, of deep recession or whatever, they may just say no, and they may just say, hey, we want our money back and we want it right now. So you have to be very, very careful. Hey, Josh, unfortunately, we are out of time. My guest is Josh Baruchim, again, find this deal and other deals at behindthedeals.com. And Josh, this was really informative, and I look forward to reading some more of your work and having you back on. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.